Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. I hope everyone is coming off a fantastic week. I had a good week. I had an amazing weekend of shows. Friday night, I was at the Gypsy Cider Circus in Kingsport, Tennessee, and I want to give a big shout-out to all the people who came back to see my show. I love you guys in Kingsport. Thank you so much. You guys are amazing. That was a good time. And then Saturday night at the Barrel House in Knoxville, that was a good time as well. Thank you guys so much for coming out and your support. It's great to see things coming back finally. It feels amazing. Something interesting about the Knoxville show is I had a friend come out to the show that I haven't seen in almost 30 years. Or maybe it has been 30 years. I'm not even sure. He was a childhood friend. Haven't seen him in a long time. And that was one of the coolest things ever. So, just a great time. Actually, I feel a little bit of pressure. Yeah, you know, I hadn't seen somebody in almost 30 years. Yeah, it was so, but it was a fun time. Fun time. That was super cool. Speaking of super cool, I got to give a big shout out to my lovely, amazing wife, Antoinette. She surprised me with a gift. And this just isn't no ordinary gift, okay? She had heard me talking about my buddy Jason, because he has one of these items, and I totally envied his, and I really wanted it, and lo and behold, shows up in the mail yesterday, my very own switchblade comb. Now guys, I've always wanted a switchblade comb. I think I may have had one when I was like 9, I'm not sure, but now I own a switchblade comb at 43 years old. And it's just the most amazing thing. So now I get to comb my hair like some creepy mugger dude from a 1980s movie. Thank you, Antoinette. You are amazing. Now, guys, have you ever woken up in the middle of the night and it's pitch dark in your room? And then you look over in the corner of the room and you see a grown man standing there wearing your underwear on top of his head? Then only to realize it was just a big old pile of dirty clothes. I mean, who hasn't done that? So that brings us to the sponsor for today's episode, Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services. Now, guys, doing laundry has never been easier with Bob. All you have to do is show up, drop your laundry off, leave, go do something fun, come back, and your clothes will be washed, dried, and folded and ready to go. Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services. They also offer a delivery service as well. If you are homebound or senior citizen, Bob will show up to your house, get your clothes, take them, wash them, and dry them and fold them, and bring them right back to your doorstep. Be sure to check out Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services located at 122 Randolph Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, or give Bob a call at 865-951-3237. This episode is also brought to you by The Grove Barbershop. Now, Jeff Hackler, owner and operator, has been making my hair look good for a while, y'all. And I'll be honest, if you can make me look good, you are good at what you do. Definitely check out Jeff Hackler at The Grove Barbershop. And make an appointment is super easy. All you have to do is go to thegrovebarbershop.com, pick your day, pick your time, show up to the barbershop. It'll be just you and Jeff. Everything's clean, COVID-friendly. He'll get you in there, get you looking great, and getting you out the door back on your feet in no time. So be sure to check out The Grove Barbershop located at 98 Randolph Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Give Jeff a call if you want to at 865-482-2210. And be sure to check out the website at grovebarbershop.com. All right, guys, I am super thrilled about the guest on today's episode. I had the pleasure when I was first starting out in the magic, getting to see this guy perform and do his magic lecture. Now, for you guys not familiar with what a magic lecture is, that's basically when a magician will hold a lecture for other magicians to come and attend, and they can learn magic and stuff like that. But this guy was teaching not just magic tricks, but he was also teaching how to be a decent, good human being. And it's something that I have carried with me my whole performing career ever since. Needless to say, I hope I'm a decent human being. I really hope I have pulled that off. And this guy was definitely giving you good advice. And not too many people give that kind of advice in entertainment. He's also a very natural, funny dude. Very funny dude. I laugh a lot during this interview, but most of the time I back away from the mic so you can't hear me. But at all of his stories, I'm laughing my butt off. I almost guarantee you have heard of his son. He's got a very famous stand-up comedian son that he's very proud of and that he talks about, and you definitely can't blame him there. So, if you will, sit back, relax, and enjoy my fun conversation with comedy magician and president of the International Brotherhood of Magicians, Stephen Bargatzky.
All right, I'm excited for our guest today. We got Stephen Bargatzky. How you doing, Stephen?
Hi, and I'm doing. I'm here. Glad to be here.
Man, I'm so excited to have you on the Abracadabra podcast. Now, every magician knows who you are. And also, you know, that last name is getting pretty doggone famous also. But do you mind to go ahead and introduce yourself for the listeners?
I'm the guy that that nobody knows. It's funny. I grew up in a town where my first cousin, I had ran away as a teenager, we'll talk about later, and ended up in Nashville. And he was a coach at Vanderbilt University, and then he went to talk radio. So all my life growing up, everywhere I went, everybody would go, you know Ron, are you related to him? And stuff like that. And it's, I heard that all the time until I had my children. And one of my child, Nate Bargatzky, is a stand-up comedian. And Nate has been on, as of this talk, he's been on Tonight Show 14 times with Jimmy Fallon. He has about 3 Comedy Central specials. He has 4 specials on Netflix. He had one just came out, the World's Greatest Ordinary America. He's going to kill me for forgetting it. Ordinary American or something. And so now I went from, are you kin to Ron, to do you know Nate? So I'm just like lost in the middle. No one ever says, are you the guy that does Matt? They just, you know Nate? Oh, it must be Ron, you know. I don't know. So I always feel like the guy. But as of the 2020, I am the International Brotherhood of Magicians president, which is, it's kind of an honor. I say I'm kind of like the third card in the Emsley count. I'm there, but nobody ever sees me.
That is gold. I love that, by the way. Okay, and now, first of all, you're selling yourself way short. You are known, and you are a fantastic magician and a very funny magician at that. You know, I want to say this real quick because I have to get this in the interview. I want to say this. I will never forget attending your lecture at the Winter Carnival of Magic, and I wasn't even really performing yet. I think I may have been doing a couple restaurants or something. And I attended your lecture and I enjoyed the lecture, but I did not realize till later on in life how important the things you were saying in your lecture that no other magician was saying in any lecture that I attended. And Stephen, you had talked about how to be a good person on the road, how to be a good father, how to be a good family man on the road while being an entertainer. And those are things that no one teaches you or tells you about. Those are things you have to learn the hard way about. And I just want to say thank you so much for that's my favorite lecture up there by far.
Well, I appreciate that. And I always felt like we don't, it's a lot of times the lectures, we don't need more tricks. We always think we do, but it's the little things like that. And just the really, those are the things I wanted to know. And it's really good because I've had to help my son with the same situation. He's traveling a lot more than I am, but still I've been able to help him. My wife has been really great in helping his wife. You know, it's like, because I can remember when Nate then was first getting started in New York, she would call and go, he didn't come home till 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't know what he's doing. And she would go, I know what he's doing. He's talking to other comedians. That's all he's doing. They're just talking jokes. They're not doing anything else. And because that's exactly, I'd come in really late. I'm just talking about magic. Because, you know, we don't get around other people that often. And when we do, we tend to hang on and just, you know, it's great to find somebody like-minded and stuff like that. But it's never, you know, so my wife had to learn, it's never what anybody might think. He's just doing magic. And she was able to give that to Nate's wife. And it's been great advice. So
it's been great advice, and it's helped me be a good father and a husband and an entertainer, you know, just hearing that advice, you know, so mm-hmm. early. So, and also the tricks were awesome too. Your tricks are amazing. I love your tricks. Right. They're funny. Okay. You ran away to Nashville with you and you, I guess you hooked up with your cousin, but what kind of led into, to magic for you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's so many different things that did, but when I was really young, I was attacked by a bulldog and bit me in the mouth and the face and stuff, and I had a bad speech impediment, and I stammered, I guess, when I was young and things like that. So I was the kind of kid kids laughed at and something when I talked, and I also was put in special ed classes, and they used to come in special ed, and they would get up my class. We would just do chores all the time. We would have to clean up the cafeteria. We'd have to pick up rocks sometimes on the football field, just stuff like that. We didn't really care, not class, so we would do it. But once they came in and we had to be in the senior play, and just had to be a hippies. And I was a great hippie. Because I kind of grew up, I always was like a practical joker. I like to do stuff like that. My sister, I have a sister, Cindy, that when she sleeps, she just like, she's out, she's dead. So I used to, in the middle of the night, I'd get up and I'd go get her and drag her into another room. And so she thinks she was sleepwalking. I'd put her outside sometimes. I mean, I just would move her all the time. I did this for years before she found out it was me. She always thought, man, I sleepwalk really bad. And I was just dragging her. But so one time before she went to high school, I put Nair in her eyebrows. It was the first day of a new school. So I'm not always as funny as you think. I thought it would be funny. But she got up and wore her face and her eyebrows fell off. She thought she had cancer, started crying. And my mom got really mad and she drew eyebrows on her, made her go to school. Her first day in a new high school, she had to show up as a prostitute. And my father took the tube of the stuff of Nair and he rubbed it in my head, which I deserved it, and just fell out in hunks, all my hair did. And besides little stuff, so I had to wear a toboggan the whole year, but I never cut my hair again. So I kind of said, all right, that's it, I'm not cutting my hair. So by the time I was a senior, I had really long hair, so I was perfect for this hippie. And doing the rehearsals, and really we were just like trees, we just walked around, we were just supposed to be people, but they needed some kid to dance around in his underwear and say this little line, and none of the cool kids would do it. And I didn't really even know this teacher very well, and I didn't think I knew her at all, but she looked at me and she said, hey, Steven, you know what, you're funny, would you get in your underwear and do this? And I said, you bet I will. And I wouldn't say the line because I was afraid I would stutter, so she got some other kid to do that. But all I had to do was act goofy and dance around like an idiot in my underwear. I made the yearbook first time in my life, and I'm in my underwear, but I made it other than the one they have to put in there. And but it kind of changed my life. I just kind of became the funny guy just because of that, and because of this teacher just saying that, you know, out of nowhere, you're funny. I didn't know I was funny. But so I always knew I wanted to do – I mean, I knew I liked that laughter. I mean, I spent about – 6-7 months kind of going around in my underwear. That didn't work. But I happened to see Ronald McDonald after I'd left home. I had got a little bit into magic and was looking. We had I was from Louisville, Kentucky. I went to high school when I was a senior at this little skinny kid named Lance Burton was like in the eighth grade or something. and Mike King was working at the magic shop down there. And I went down there to get some jokes. I didn't go down to get magic. So I just wanted the fake poop and vomit and shocking things and stuff like that. But I think Mike might have talked me into getting a trick or something. But I didn't really know that much. There was no magic club in Louisville at that time. So I didn't kind of let that part go. And I had run away. I'm living with Ronnie. And I'm eating at a McDonald's. And I see Ronald McDonald. His name was Tom Hart. And he was a school teacher here. But he was just fantastic of a person. But as a magician and Ronald McDonald, he was great at all that stuff. And I just remember meeting him and telling him, asking him, you know, how do you do this stuff, man? Are you like born this way or something? And I was really polite. I waited till kids were done. I didn't, you know, interrupt him. And he was kind enough to show me how to back palm a card and said, come back out. And then we just became great friends. And he got me interested in close-up and sleight of hand magic and even putting makeup on. And when I'd start doing the makeup, when he would dress up as a clown, I would dress up as a clown. So probably legal, if you look, my son's first comedy album was called Yelled At by a Clown.
Yes.
And yeah. The picture on the cover is me and Nate when Nate's about 3.5, 4 years old. But that's, you could tell I'm a lot like Ronald McDonald there. So if I made my own wig, because I would do that. And I started doing birthday. Tom taught me the great advice. He'd always say, you know, I just gotten married. I got married when I was really young. And, you know, he said, you can't be spending all your money on magic, which, of course, everybody wants to do. And so he says, you make money with magic, you can spend it. So get it a regular job. So any money I made doing birthday parties or anything like that, I could go spend it on magic. And I still think that's great advice for anybody kind of getting started and stuff. Just get a show together where you can get some money at a birthday party and take that. Even if you say, I don't even like kids, I just want to do close-up. I still did that. And then so I bought close-up magic with the stuff that I wanted to do. But I had at least a good show for children. And working with children and working in nightclubs and comedy clubs with drunks, there's not a lot of difference.
There's not.
No, it's just all about, can I keep control and keep these things from falling apart? And it's just, you know, it's making, if you can make drunks like you can make kids like you.
Yeah.
And so it was great training ground for me to get that. And Tom was just fantastic and pushing me in the right place. I always wanted to be Lance because that's the kind of magic I like the most. But Tom, you know, I was still really stuttering, I stammered, and I still have a strange voice. You have to really listen to me. And so Tom would tell me, Steve, I think you're just going to have to be funny. I think you're going to have to work on your comedy and do that instead of trying to make a cane dance and do all the float that big ball. So I just started going to comedy clubs. This was in the 80s, and we would go. Back then, everybody had a comedy club. They were in bowling alleys. They were in hotels. And I worked all of those. I didn't work the big funny bones and stuff at that time. I was just going to these little places nobody knew and just to get up and do it. But I gradually found, you know, hey, I can be funny. And it was at the Winter Carnival. It's funny you mentioned that to me there. It was one there for the first time I got in a contest. And I got in the contest because Tom, my mentor, Tommy Hart, he said, you know what, if you win a contest, you could charge money. You can tell everybody you're a champion. I didn't know you can just make it up and say that because we got, you know, we give each other all of our awards. Everybody's a champion of something. You won some contest. So I entered it, did not win, but I met so many people that did that. And for the first time, I always had that feeling that I thought everybody at Winter Carnival, I thought they were all David Copperfields walking around and I'm just some idiot that just does card tricks at restaurants and birthday parties. And I didn't think I could hold a candle to any of these guys. I thought, golly, they're all fantastic. And I just had no idea. And I didn't think that who would think that they might like what I was doing. But the thing about, and I really suggest if you've never entered a contest or done it, the thing about it, it gets you a family. And people are like you said, you go, because now if I saw you, you could go, hey, you know what? I really like what you do. And then we would have that in common. And then I'd also know what kind of person you are. I know that you laugh when people fall and get hurt. You don't let them see you, but you're that guy that'll laugh at somebody that gets hurt. I'm that way. We have a weird, sick sense of humor. People that like me are strange kind of people, but they're my people. And we have the same thing. And the same with my son. The ones that like my son's comedy, they're going to think like that. And then, you know, you say, he says what they think. And so that's the neatest part. Through that, I met Mike King as he was a judge in another contest in St. Louis. And I didn't really, you know, I had been to Caulfield's, but I didn't know that later on I saw Mike King's show and I'm going, oh my gosh, this guy's fantastic. And then to find out that he liked what I was doing and I got invited to come fill in for him. And I mean, that was just an amazing thing to go to Vegas and fill in for Mike King.
I bet that was awesome. I remember seeing you going out there and filling in when you were doing that. I remember seeing that. I bet that was amazing.
It's amazing and not so amazing all in the same time. Because I always kid Mike. We all know in the magic world, he's fantastic. But in the real world, I could actually go out there and say I'm Mike King and 80% of the audience wouldn't know any different. The only thing they know is that right before I come on, they make an announcement that Mike King's not there. So then instead of clapping, you hear, oh, God. And you see the whole audience going like, and can we get out of here? And you've got about 5-6 minutes to win them over and make them want to stay. But so you got to start off really, really strong, or at least something that makes them go, okay, I'm not asking for my money back. And that's one thing I'm very proud of. I know there's some guys that did, but Mike, either he lied to me or not, but he said that I was one of the ones that they've never had anybody request their money back or say that they, you know, didn't like it. And I can get people to wait in line to meet me and stuff like they do Mike. But
I can't imagine. I didn't even think about that. First of all, how much pressure that must have been, because I mean, you're filling Matt King's shoes, you know?
Oh yeah. So, yeah. They just heard this guy was fantastic. Got to go see him. Now they're there. And some of them are comp tickets, so they didn't really pay, so they're not that invested. But they heard it was a good show. Then they go, the guy's not here. You know, where's the door? You know, they're not going to give you that much time. And I tell you what, it took me about 4 or 5 times to figure out the right formula and what to do on that. Because at first, when they would go, oh, like that, I would step out behind the curtain and go, look, I didn't want to be here either. I was I was wanting to be at Caesars, and I stepped back out. But then they didn't know who that was, and they're all going like, what was that? So that didn't work. And then I tried different things. And then the best thing I did, it was a he by have a owl trick, and where he cuts the rope up in the pieces, and you say you saw a guy do it, and you open it up, and it just falls apart. And you go, I don't know how the guy did it. And so I started doing that, and I would go cut it in half, and boom. And I go, and the first trick I saw, boom, it's back to nothing. I don't know how they did it. Mike King can do it. Y'all should come when he's here. Y'all got screwed. And then I would ask the guy who I know is comped, I'd say, I don't know why Mike's not here. What did you pay for your ticket, sir? And he'd go, I didn't pay nothing. And I'd go, and then you're the reason why he's not here. Now, if this show goes bad, it's this guy's fault. And I tell you what that does. And I started doing this in my high school shows, and it's just a great opener for me, because it tells the audience I'm not one of these guys that thinks I'm so great and stuff. I mean, they're all going, all right, I'll watch this. There's no way he's going to put that back together. Well, then he don't. And then they kind of go, all right, he don't take himself too serious. And they will really laugh at that. And then they start beginning to like me. And then we know that. Anybody performs, I mean, doing any kind of show, just making the audience like you and make it worthy of them staying and listening or watching whatever you do.
Yeah, if you can get them to like you, you can do anything.
Yes.
You know? And which I think with you, Steve, that's one thing you're a master at. You're a master at getting your audience to like you. You know, you've got that sense of charm around you.
or can they just want to see if an idiot can really fool them? This guy, surely he can't fool me. But it just, you know, I don't take anything too serious, and it's like I'm just as surprised as you are this stuff is working. And I don't really kind of know. And I tell you what's happening. I've got all my hair has turned completely gray. I had double knee surgery. It's been about 6 or 7 years ago. And when I was really young, and if you look at my son, Nate, you see his hair is turning gray really fast. But mine turned on the sides. Did not turn gray on top. Just the sides did. I mean, all the sides. So it looked like I had a toupee. It looked horrible. And they didn't, so I had to dye my hair, and I dyed my hair for 15 years. And then when I got my knees done, I couldn't dye my hair. And then I realized, well, now the top's gray. So that's fantastic.
You're caught up.
But I tell you what, that character with all the gray hair, it changed everything. It's like I can get away with anything. Now I'm that uncle or that guy that everybody just, because I am opening a lot for Nate. And I'm going to go on tour with him, not this year, but the next year. Because of the IBM pregnancy, I didn't get to do it. But when this is over, and right now he's making up for the ones he's missed because of COVID. He's going back and finishing those. Then I will probably go out with him. But, I mean, his audience is younger and different, you know. And, you know, I am, and we're old-fashioned, and I'm not politically correct. And I'm going to say stuff that people have to – that his crowd kind of goes, what? Especially because there were times I opened up for him, and we didn't tell him I was his dad. And they were just kind of like, at first, they're like shocked. But then once they find out I'm his dad, they go lose their mind. They think it's great. And Nathan would tell them. But now, he's the last two specials, The Tennessee Kid and The Greatest Average American. He talks about me in the app and doing magic. So now, when they hear I'm there, they lose their mind. So I get a standing ovation as soon as I walk out and without doing anything. And then I tell a story about Nate, something that we didn't always think he was funny. And then I do the Joe Gibbons gumball machine and a knife gag and just a couple of gags. He only gives me 18 minutes. He's not the nicest kid in the world. But he pays really good. So I'm just doing that little bit of time. But when I'm done, they lose their mind again. It's kind of like, they're glad to see that I'm real, you know, that a comic is talking about his real life. With Nathan, if you look at it, especially The Tennessee Kid, if you go at the end of the special, he shows all these pictures of the jokes he was telling to show you, like he talks about my brother-in-law, the wedding, he just wore a jacket without a shirt because the shirt didn't come, so he thought it'd be funny. And so he's got a picture of him, and it got all these pictures of a dead horse and all this stuff. And so people like to know that it's real. So they like to see, hey, Nate's dad is really does magic. And that's great.
Well, you know, with comedy and stand up, the funniest stuff are the actual real things, the things that actually happen, you know. First of all, there's so much, I mean, it's got to be amazing to be opening for your son. In a million years, did you ever think that you would be going on tour with your son and opening for it?
No, who knows? And he has a tour bus that he's gotten and bought from some pretty big stars at once. I mean, it's unbelievable to ride around just in that. And our family, we've gone with him just to ride in the bus. Like to Knoxville for 4 hours. My whole family, we all went over there with him just to, as a family, to have fun riding on the bus and doing everything. But you know, the thing, the neatest thing of all is just seeing people loving your son. And to just know, I mean, the turnout. And I walk around in the beginning just in my regular clothes and just kind of go up and meet people and just say, hey. And what I'm was so neat about Nate, because he's a clean comedian, and that you've got all ages there. And I'll meet a lot of young people that'll say, yeah, I brought my parents, or this is my granddaddy. And then you meet parents that saying, yeah, we brought our kids, teenagers to come, and we wanted them to hear. And this is something that we can enjoy. So I like to go out and find out. Usually if there's couples and stuff, I always say, who found Nate first? Who's the one that turned the other one on to Nate? And just kind of do that. So then they kind of, and sometimes I'll tell them, sometimes I don't, but I'll say, yeah, I'm his dad. I just appreciate it. But so I do all that in the beginning.
Well, you know, one of the great things about Nate, I'll say this, is he is a clean comic, but you don't realize he's a clean comic. Yeah. I mean, you know, he's clean, but I mean, it's not, you know, it's just your mind's not even going anywhere near anything like that. And then you just, and if you get thinking about it, you're like, well, I could bring the whole family to see Nate's show.
Yeah, that's a great observation on your half. And I've heard Nathan on many times, he doesn't want to be labeled as a clean comedian necessarily, but just as a comedian, but he does say that. He wants people to get done and then maybe step back later and go, well, you know what? I don't think I heard anything
bad in
that, especially if they watch it the second time. And you know, like you said, but if they can watch it, don't even notice.
I don't even.
It's just that he's funny.
And the way I look at stand-up the same way I do magic, you know, because I do comedy. I'm a stand-up comedy magician. So I don't look at a lot of stand-up. I really don't watch a whole lot of it. Nate's I do watch because I enjoy it. The specials that I've seen, I really enjoy. Matter of fact, there's one bit that he tells that I think is just absolutely the gold. It's his time traveling bit.
Oh, I think, yeah.
That is gold. That is gold. You know, and the same thing with magic. I don't even, there's a lot of magic that I don't, you know, there's some, but not a whole lot, you know, but whenever I do notice something special, I have to pay attention to it. And I'm just like, well, you know, this is great. But yeah, his comedy, Nate has figured out a way to do what I think a lot of comics want to do is figure out a way to be clean and not realize it, you know?
So. Yeah. You know, and here's something that people may not know too. And I wouldn't mean to tell Nate this because I heard him. He got asked this the other day. He was on with David Spade, and they were talking about it. And I wish Nathan would have said, but I don't even know if he thought about it. Nathan's not dirty himself. We're not. I don't curse. I never have, and my kids have never heard me curse or anything like that. If you hit my thumb with a hammer, I'm going to say, shoot, darn it, gum it. I mean, that's just who we are. That's who I am. And that's who Nate is. And he's just, so it's not natural for him to, he's not holding back. He's being who he is all the time. That you, what you see of Nate is who Nate is when you're around him 24/7, he's that way. He's not all of a sudden he's going to lose his mind and start cursing everybody. He just doesn't do it.
Well, maybe, you know, because Steve, I think you're naturally funny. You're one of these people, you know, people, there's some people just born that way. And, you know, I think just what you're saying when you do your sister, stuff like that's hilarious. So, I mean, I think you have a natural funny with you, which is a gift. So, and maybe Nate inherited that from his dad, you know?
Yeah. But I'm telling you what, my wife, very funny. She's got that dry humor and everything. And that's what always attracted me to her. Very much in her family, they put down, put each other down, and say stuff.
What is it with entertainment? My wife's the same way, Steve. She's got a dry sense. She's funnier than me a lot of times.
I agree. We had to do a questionnaire once or something, and all of us picked my wife as the funniest in our family. You know, but my other son Derek, he's a missionary, and now he's a school teacher back there back home. And he is very, very funny, and he does some sketch comedy and things like that. Very funny. And my daughter is great. She's the best practical joker of the family.
Does she do something with speaking as well? Did your daughter?
She's a X-ray tech at a VA hospital.
Okay, cool.
So she's doing great. All my kids are doing things that I think are really worthy and special. It's really neat. My son, he teaches third grade, and his wife's a midwife, and So they're all doing the right things. I got 7 grandkids. So
wow. Now let me ask you this. So because this is neither of my kids are interested in entertainment. You know, I've got a 21-year-old son. He did some acting and stuff, but my daughter, I got a 12-year-old daughter. She's not really interested, but I'm hoping one day I'll have some grandkids that may be interested in magic. Are any of your grandkids at all interested in magic?
You know what? Every school, they have to do something there. They'll call me to teach them a trick or something, and they've got access to anything they want. But no one is really – the bug has never even gotten it. My son, when he was a missionary, he'd worn it – simple little stuff, sponge balls and handkerchiefs and coloring book and little simple things like kids that he could get and teach a lesson with. Matter of fact, I just gave him one last night for a lesson he had to do today. And so he'll just call me up and do that. And you know what? Nathan had no desire. We didn't know anything. Nathan was always just naturally funny as a kid and did things. He used to be Stevie Urkel, and he could do him perfect. But he went off to college, and he went to a little school. Then he went to another college, Western Kentucky. And we got his grade first semester, and he failed everything. He even failed bowling. I mean, how do you fail bowling? And so we found out he never once went to class, you know, which would have been, you know, Nate, just tell me. I'm still paying for this stuff. You never went to a single class. He just was living up there. But he started going to comedy clubs and started looking in the scene about doing that. So then, you know, and it was fine with me. We were happy with it. We said, all right, great. You know, I said, you should go to Second City and see what you know. So he went there for a year, and he found out he didn't like improv. He wanted to learn stand-up, and he knew to do that, he had to go to New York. So he went to New York, started off at the bottom, and walked out, you know, giving away free tickets just to get 2 minutes on stage. But we had... I had friends, Eric DeCamp and other magicians and friends of mine that lived in New York that I could say, go by and see if you see my son, is he working? Because we were still helping him some. Because I wasn't going to help him if he wasn't working, you know, if he wasn't out there trying to do it, bark and get up. But he did. And he went up every night for 9 years, he said. He never missed a night. He went up every time. Until he became, you know, started getting success. He still owes me money, but he's doing.
That is awesome, Steve. Gosh, man, that is amazing. You are something else. So, you know, I can only imagine as a dad, you know, Nate apparently knows he's lucky. He lucked out on dads. let me go back to you here because, you know, you did mention when you was a child, you had the pit bull attack. And for a lot of people that could cause a lot of confidence issues. But for you to pick up a profession where speaking is pretty much everything, did you ever have any problems with overcoming that or?
Yeah, I think that shows you I'm not that smart. And who would do that? Who would pick this profession when I couldn't, but that's why Tom was so good being Ronald McDonald, and I became Yo-Yo the Clown, because it was like the clown had a good reason to talk funny. And I would meet, I would get other clowns that would go, man, how do you do your voice? And I'd tell them, look, got to get a dog and stick it on your face. But none of them was ever serious. But I had a great clown voice. So that's where I got my courage built up gradually was, you know, the first 8 or 9 years of performing, most of the time I was a clown. And then I could just got where, you know, I don't want to keep putting this makeup on. So I just started taking it off and just getting more and more. I was very confident in my magic by then. But when I fell off, I was like everybody else. When I first just started doing close-up magic and things, I looked down at my hands. I never looked up. I didn't have that confidence and stuff. And I would try to do stuff that has, you know, the pattern with the right words. I know words I can say and pronounce and stuff. But that's why it was easier to be funny. and goof off if something went wrong, or if you messed up a word, you people just thought that was part of the comedy, and you just kept going.
Your show is hilarious, though. And seeing you perform on stage, you would never know there was, you know, you ever struggled with that ever, you know.
Yeah, I still struggle every time I go on. I just did a show it's been 2 days ago. I did it. One of my first live thing was 442 people in Alabama, Montgomery, Alabama. And so I went down, and I was just as nervous. I get nervous every show until I hear that first laugh. And yeah. My nerves is not about the magic necessarily. It's about, do they like me? And then once I hear that and I feel like, okay, they like me, then I can relax and I can be myself and do whatever I want to do. So it's been, but it's been different with this COVID. I did a little comedy club last week before the warm up for this week. And I did the Bill and the Lemon, and I tossed it over the person's head, paper balled over the head kind of thing. And then I make it disappear later in the show, and ends up in the lemon underneath the cup. Well, I got the lemon, getting ready to cut it open. And I look down and notice I forgot the dollar bill still on the floor. So I had to go, okay, here, hold this. And then, you know, improvise. So then the next show I did it, I go, I'll make sure I'm going to pick up that dollar bill. And, see it. So I got it. I'm ready to go. And I reach back. I don't have the lemon even in my pocket. It's still over there in the table. So, you know, this COVID thing, it's just now, you know, something I've done for 30 years. You just I have to go, all right, I got to get back in that mode again, where I check. Because I went through a little period of doing everything where you can't touch and can't bring nobody up and stuff. And I'm not a big fan of all this. I mean, I like my normal act is I got somebody and it's me interacting with a person. And yeah. That's what I like. And that's what makes it different. There's no two shows alike. And you people enjoy watching that interaction. But with the COVID, all of a sudden that we all had to become mentalists. And yeah. Just think of this and like this, and I'll stay here and show you
how that is so true. That is so true. Yeah. What's first of all, as long as you have been entertaining too, and it's still crazy to think that you do get that little nerve, and but you want that acceptance that they like you. I deal with that. But once you feel like, you know, they like you, you know, let's roll with it. I've done the same thing. I had a situation one time. I was doing the Bill and Lemon, and I remember Brian Gillis.
Yeah.
This was years ago. I was doing a street show, and I was in the middle of doing a Bill and Lemon, and I looked up. And I saw Brian Gillis standing in the crowd, and I was thinking,
oh no,
don't screw up, Danny. No, you know, and I'm about to have a panic attack in the back of my head. I'm just trying to do the show. And then I wind up slicing my thumb on the lemon up, and I'm just cramming my thumb in the lemon, and there's lemon juice in there, and I'm trying not to cry. But that I don't know that Bill and Lemon, there could be a curse with that, I guess. Who knows? But
yeah. Well, have you done live shows yet?
Yes, I've done a few. I've done a few at some comedy clubs, and I've actually got some booked next month. Well, no, this month. It's already April. I've already forgotten that it's April. So I'm looking forward to, you know, to that. Things are starting to open up slowly. They're starting to open up.
Yeah. And this, the comedy clubs are great now. People that are coming out the comedy clubs, first of all, they're not afraid. No. And I know everybody else doing it. They've taken their chance. And, you know, and I always ask, I've been vaccinated. So the chances of me making it through this show is about 97%, but I don't know about you. And so if you have any doubts or anything like that, just raise your hand now. Let me know. And I will make sure I won't ask you, but I'm going to ask for, you know, I want to get back to where I can get some people up. And I'm still not doing everything I normally would do, but at least I got them standing there.
Yeah.
And so I can get that interaction. So I found out that, And comedy clubs, no problem. 90% of the people raise their hand. You got those people that's got their masks on at their table, and I have no problems with that. But then you know, okay, I'm just going to leave that person alone.
That's right.
Or not try to walk anywhere near her. But in Alabama, they still had the rule where everybody had to wear their mask. It hadn't really quite been lifted yet, but they still were very good about it because I had mine on, so I thought I had to wear mine, and it was really hard with the mic, and I really thought going down there I wouldn't have to, and so I have a shield. I wish I'd have bought the shield, but I just had this mask, so I had to finally take it off just because I talk funny bad enough, and so I was just asking who's not afraid, who's been vaccinated. Well, okay, good, you come up. And it seemed to work, you know, and so I'm hoping within the next, I got a show next week in a school. I just hope that that's what I can do. I'm hoping to go back and put the mentalism stuff back in the drawer. And I spent so much money on Zoom magic trying to, I never did it. I did a couple shows. I thought they were terrible. And I did one show. Called the something silent. It was one of the first ones that was even out there, and something theater. And what they put you on a big stage with all the empty seats behind you, and they had six cameramen. I mean, it was fantastic. Uh-huh. And I did my. I was supposed to do 30 minutes, and I was able to do it in about 16. And, it was like horrible because you. There's no laughter, so you just, okay, the cameramans are all working on the camera. it's really funny.
Zoom, I found hard about Zoom was, you know, I saw a lot of magicians. You know how magicians get whenever they get a chance to play with toys and stuff, you know, they're like kids. Yeah. And they couldn't wait to make their Zoom show look like a television show. And to me, I think that's missing the point. You know, I'm like, we should try to forget there's this barrier here as much as possible. But I've done them. I don't like doing them either, Steve. I would rather give me a live audience any day.
I'm starting to turn. And I think we got to be careful too. And no offense, but I've seen a lot of Zoom too. We're cheating too much. It's easy to cheat on Zoom.
It's super easy.
But what's going to happen is they're going to not believe again. In the beginning, people took, you know, people would go, regular deck of cards, people go, sure it is. Why would he say that? But not you know, not every time you go, I got a card, and you lean all the way in, and come back. Okay. I think they're catching on.
In this little square. I saw this a few weeks back on Facebook, and a magician was playing around with an app they were using on Zoom. And apparently this app, Steve, will make it look like something just vanishes.
Wow.
And I was like, the fact that that even exists, no, that's gonna kill your magic.
I agree. No one's gonna believe it. Yeah, so I'm with you. I just decided there's a lot of, you know, and when I was first started spinning, then all of a sudden Justin Wilmer started doing them, and Mike King and Danny or Lee, I can 100 people that Danny Cole that started doing these things. Well, these guys got all this technology, and why would I? And now, if my next door neighbor can hire them instead of me, why would they want me when they can get somebody like that? So I said, well, why am I wasting my money and time on all this cameras and lights and everything? So I quickly let that go. And I'm just waiting for it to get back to as normal as possible, and we'll have to pull it from there.
And I think it's coming. And also, I want to say, someone would be stupid not to hire Steve Bargatze because a heck of an entertainer. Not just a magician; you're a entertainer, is what you are. Well, let's hear this, because I always ask every Abracadam episode. Okay, when I have an entertainer on, I want to hear a hell gig story. What's a gig that something went wrong, something crazy, something? And you just told one about the Bill and Lemon. I thought that was funny.
That's good enough. I had one with Nathan. I'm doing the opening of a brand new mall, and how long ago it was. Now this mall is now closed, turned into a school, but it was first opening then. And so Nathan was probably about six, and he wanted to come and work dress up as a clown and do all of this stuff with me. And I said, all right, I was doing Run Rabbit Run, but it was with a dog. It was Bonzo the dog, and he would go back and forth. And of course, and this is a fantastic kid trick because they're going to lose their mind. But I had done it, so Nathan has a little microphone, and he's supposed to go wild. And he's supposed to tell me, there he goes, there he is, over there and over there. And then the dog would disappear, and I had a change bag, and he would end up in the bag. I put a bunch of dog bones in there, and then the dog would be in there, and the bones were gone. So that was the ending. Well, once we start this great trick, Nathan gets stage fright. So, and it's his first time. So he just starts, he's pointing, and he's barely saying anything. Nothing's in the mic. And I'm not egging the kids on or nothing. The audience. And so it was just like, I go, speak up. I can't hear you. And he just would just like point real sheeply. So finally I said, all right, forget it. So I set him on this back railing behind me. And then I turn around. I get the kids to do it. Everybody's yelling at people doing what they're supposed to do. And then in the meanwhile, he sits there. He looks. He noticed, because I already made the switch, that the dog's already in the bag. So he, for the first time in his life, he sees that extra Bonzo dog in there. And he also looks up and he sees one running across and doing all of that. So now he decides to get brave and come up to the microphone loud enough to make sure I know, Dad, there's another dog already in there. I'm trying to go, now shut up. He goes, no, he's already in the bag. He's in the bag right now. He's in there. And so, and then that's very, so I'm just like, oh gosh. Yeah, and in the very same show I was doing, I was an idiot. So I was producing a bunch of candy and I was just going to throw it out there, which is, we all know how kids can die doing that. But I on the dove pan, somehow I had the big pan in there and the little pan out. So I'm putting all the bubbles and everything in here. And when I do that, I got the two pans switched. So I'm banging this thing, beating it up. So that was my show from hell, I guess, my nightmare show. But that's really, really a long time ago. You know, the funny thing, I look back. I mean, I always have little things. I've done Gene Anderson's Paper Tear, where you remember when everybody was going to the magnets. And I thought, all right, I'll do the magnet version of it. The first or second time I did it, it falls out, hits my foot, and I kick it out in the audience. It just goes flying. And so, the funny thing is, 90% of the people didn't see nothing. And I just took the paper and I go, well, the good thing is you can hand this out. So I go hand it to the guy that's got the wad. I go, here, examine that paper. I'll take that. I just put it in my pocket and walked away. So I think, you know, that's what makes us professional, is that we all have little things that go wrong, but we can get out of it. And I got a lot of comedy out of the forgetting the lemon. I mean, this room I was in was, you could put a 747 in it. So they had everybody socially distanced. It was gigantic. So all my magic is really far over there in the corner. And I had do it where the guy that put it on, that put the show on, he said, I'll help you get all your stuff up when it's time for you after this speaker. Well, he didn't. And he's the executive director of this company, and he was busy. So I'm having to carry all my stuff up myself. And that's why I kind of forgot that, because I'm just trying to get up there real quick. So when I don't even have the lemon in my pocket. I have to walk all the way over there and get it. But the whole time I'm walking, the guy, his name was Steve. I go, yeah, but Steve said, I'll help you. And I hope you get everything loaded. That way you won't forget anything and leave something all the way over here. But we all know, where's Steve? Nobody knows. He volunteers to help all the time. But when it comes down to real work, Steve couldn't be found, could he? We still can't. And I mean, the audience are dying because this is the boss. Who talks about their boss that way? But they all say that. But you know what? It made comedy out of something that I have to go get. There's nothing I can do. I have to go get the lemon and the baseball and put them in my pocket.
And that's what, you know, and those, I think those things that you do learn from those mistakes, and like you being a veteran, you know, you knew exactly how to handle that situation.
Yeah, yeah. So it turned out it was very, very funny and a great line. I do a trick too when there's I'm just telling you this so I won't forget. But I got this little girl. This was in the comedy club, and somebody brought a kid to the comedy club. Like, I don't know why that was legal. And but it was a club in it's a new bar, and but it didn't serve food. I don't know how they got this kid in there. But so I did my I hate kid trick with him. And which is perfect for when there's only especially one kid. It's a great trick just to do it. If you ever show up and there's a kid there, especially if this kid's not supposed to be there, it's great. And but I got this little girl up, and her name was a mile long, and there's no way I can pronounce it. So I asked her name, and I go, "What? Say it again." And I go, "I want you to know it's not your fault. It's your mom's. For the rest of your life, you're going to tell people your name, and people are going to go, what? Every time. You're always going to have to say it more than once. And that's your mom's fault, because she could have just named you Debbie, and we would be done right now, or Susan." I go, no. So for the rest of your life, when somebody asks you, you look at your mom. I mean, the audience was dying. I thought, that's really a good, funny concept.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious.
If you get somebody's name you can't pronounce, I don't blame you.
I've had times where I couldn't, and I just said, "Well, I'm just gonna call you Bill."
Okay? Yeah.
Let's do this. Let's talk about this also, because now you've gained something else, another title. You are the president of the International Brotherhood of Magicians, which is a big deal. It's worldwide. In a million years, did you ever think that you would have that title?
No, and I got a lot of people to blame, John Farquhar and Michael Finney are the main two. They even asked me to do this, and I said, "Well, let me just find out what's happening, and I'll help with the board and help do some stuff." And then I was in Iraq doing some shows with Jason Michaels, and I do Armed Forces Entertainment. So we was over there, and I got a call and said, we need you to run for president. And I told Mike, I go, "Mike, I don't think I'm going to have the time or be able to do this." I said, "I'll help any way you need me to help. But if you can get me out of this, it'd be great." He goes, "I got your back." And 3 hours later, Joe Turner says, "Congratulations, you got elected president." And so, oh, great. But and then the pandemic hit. And so, we haven't stopped. We've done a lot. We've redone and revamped our insurance. We worked a lot on that. We're working on more benefits and why you should be a member and stay a member. And we did decide to postpone the big convention that's coming up in July. And I'm going to look up the dates real fast, but we are going to do, an online one. So I am doing a virtual, but I'm going to go down Ken Scott, who's the vice president and fantastic entertainer. Talk about another entertainer guy. And I think it's really good that the IBM, for years, you know, we got businessmen, we got different people, but it's good to have entertainers as presidents.
I agree.
Because we really kind of, there's a different understanding there. And I like that. And, in July, it's going to be from the 6th. It's kind of, that's for us. The actual convention is going to be the 9th and the 10th of July.
Okay.
And John Farquhar is getting all the talent, and it's going to be released soon, and I'm not allowed to tell you, but I'm telling you, it's going to be a powerful lineup. Nate will be there, I'll tell you that. And me and Nate, and then Ken, well, me and Ken will be together. I'll go down to Atlanta. That's where our convention is in 2022. The 100th year will be down there. So we're going to go and do some stuff from that hotel to kind of just show what's coming up and stuff. But it's going to be a really fun, neat day and everything. But hopefully it's one of the last Zoom conventions we have to go to.
Well, I hope so. The one in Atlanta, that sounds like that's going to be a blast.
Yeah, I think they're going to go all hold out. And I am going down at the president to save the most money. I didn't lose money. I'm not spending anything.
Do they get you an Air Force One? President,
no, I got an Uber, my first ride free thing from if I needed to go anywhere close. Buy and stuff though, but I've spent less than $100 probably so far. you get 6,000, I think, or 4,000. I don't know what you get. Don't matter.
One more question: do you get like a secret service of magicians, anything like that?
No, wow. I get nothing from these guys. I just get hard at pain. No, I tell you what, there's. Let me just be honest. I'm a member of the SAM and the IBM, and I think they're both good organizations. I don't know the in and out of the SAM, what I do of the IBM, and the people on the boards. These are good people, and they really do look out for the magicians and try to do things that are best and try to offer. And it seems like a lot of other things. You know, we were the first ones that started that jam and those online things. And there's so much free content. There's enough that it would take you a lifetime to really study just what we put up since the pandemic started to go back and listen to all these things that are free to all of our members. And this year, both on virtual and in the year 2022, all youth, if you're a youth, you can attend the convention for free.
Oh, that's awesome.
You have to have a chaperone, of course. Somebody has to come. I can't drop you off at the hotel, but as long as you got somebody going with you, the kids can come free. And Lance Burton does that. And Jeff McBride and those guys get in there. So it's really an amazing thing.
That's super cool. Well, I tell you what, Steve, let me do this. I got to ask you a thought-provoking question before we get out of here. Now, and this, I've asked a few guys this. If you could travel, just say 3 years into the future, and ask Steve Bargatze 3 years from now one question, what would that question be?
Wow. Are you still alive? that's probably be the big thing that I want to know.
Let's you know, hope I'm a, so.
I would hope that I would ask him, have you gotten hurt in the last 3 years and anything that you need to not to do? Because this has been a rough year. I broke my foot in Thanksgiving playing basketball with my grandkids, and I'm still in a little brace and a cast. I can't get this thing to heal. And I'm just doing stupid stuff. And so I need to know what not to do.
Well, we got to take care of yourself.
I played kickball the other day when I shouldn't have been playing kickball, but on Easter, my family played kickball just because Nathan needs material. And I about killed myself there. I lost my balance and was about to lose it. I had to. So if I go ahead, I would find out. So it might say, hey, you know that that time somebody wants me to play pickleball, this new game. I don't even, not too sure what it is, but I got invited to it. And I'd like to know if somebody go, don't go play pickleball.
Also, let me ask you, do you got any advice, anything that you could give to anyone maybe listening that may have some confidence they want to overcome, something they may want to do?
Yeah, you know what? Sometimes make sure you're listening to the right people. Because, in the beginning, there were some people that I kind of thought listened to and, might have told me, oh, you don't need to get in the contest. They're all fixed. They're all wrong. You don't need to do this or that. And I was lucky enough to listen to the right people. But some people tell you it's not funny or this is make sure you're getting good advice and listen. You know, there's nothing better than being yourself and just kind of, if your character is a little bit, of course, I am actually way quieter in life than I am on stage. But maybe that stage is always who I want to be, or you know, so it's not too far from me and stuff. So if you're true to yourself, then it's going to be a great show. People, it's going to be great. And I my big advice for performers is to find your character, your through line, or whoever you are. Because once you've done that, the magic comes so easy. Because, you know, I remember Tennessee first got a lottery here. And there were so many great tricks out on lottery tickets where you could predict every number. My character is not smart enough to pull that off.
Yeah.
And so for me to, I was trying to do this stuff. And then people were going, well, he had to get lucky because he's an idiot. No, there's no other way that can be done. But now that I know, I can see a trick now and right away go, okay, I can twist and make that me. Or I can change. That's why I like magic. The necessary is not funny because then it gives me room. I don't like to can't do anything David Williamson or Matt King does. How can you, they're fantastic. How can I make it funnier than what they're already doing? So I like to get somebody that's not quite as funny, and then I can say, now that trick I can do and make it funny, and I can make it myself. So once you got that character, then the magic becomes so easy.
That's, you're taking that trick and making it your own. You're putting your money into it. I agree with you completely. Let me bring this up before we get out of here. I know you probably don't even remember this, but this was a couple years ago at the Ring 58 Christmas party. We were doing a dirty Santa or sneaky Santa, whatever it is. And I was there, you were there, and I had a magic trick that I really wanted, and you took it.
You know what? I should be shot. why would I have taken that for? I was wanting the stamps. Was it the card that spit on your finger?
I think it was something like that. Yeah,
I think that's what I ended up. I'd mail you that tomorrow. That gave me the biggest sore on my finger in my life, and I was trying to get it to trade something so I could trade for the stamps. And I never have liked Secret Santa. I still don't like Secret Santa, and because it's just a mean game. And I apologize. And I just hope that when I get to heaven, that's not the one thing that keeps me out. I'm going to have to play that scene over again. I was trying to get those Houdini stamps.
Well, I tell you what, if you don't mind, can you let the listeners know where they can find more about you, Steve?
Yeah, well, my website is Magic of Stephen, STEPHEN, magicofstephen.com. And so you can pretty much just take care of that. And Nate at Comedy Something, I don't know, Nate. You can find my son anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah, you can everywhere right now.
Yeah, so then through him, you usually can find me or something like that, though. We just downsized to a condo and everything on one floor, and it's been really, really good. Unfortunately, I lost half of my magic books.
Oh, no.
Yeah, some really old, good books. I was going to have to get rid of them anyway because this place is not – I lost my magic room. It was in half the size as it was. So I had to get rid of them. And I was going to try to sell them in an auction, and they've been lost in the mail since January the 7th.
Oh, gosh. That's horrible.
It's horrible. So if you see a book out there with my name, I signed every one of them. But, of course, most of my books were signed. All my Slidinis, Di Vernon, I had all of this stuff, and Garcias and – just who knows where they are. The post office doesn't.
Gosh, that's horrible. So, I've heard a lot of people, because of COVID, had mail that's being delayed. So you think there might still be a chance they might eventually show up?
All right. You know, only can pray. That'd be great.
I see Stephen McGratzy's name in a book, I'm going to get it. Even though you took my magic trick, I will mail those books to you.
That's right. And I'll mail whatever that trick was. I'm pretty sure it's that. Makes your fingers sore, and you'll be glad you didn't get it.
Well, I tell you what, Steve, seriously, this has been a blast. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Well, it was great. Glad to be a part of it. You do a great job, buddy.
Guys, that's it for this episode, and I really hope you enjoyed my conversation with Stephen Bargatzky. Like I said, he's a naturally funny dude. Be sure to check out his website at themagicofsteven.com. That's spelt with a P and an H, not a V. Be sure to check him out. And also, magicians, anyone, if you see any magic books out there that's got Stephen Bargatzky's signed name in it, return it to Stephen Bargatzky. Contact him at the website, The Magic of Stephen, or contact me, and we'll get those books back to him, because trust me, magicians do not like losing their magic books. They don't like losing that. Also, if you guys can, be sure to spread the word, subscribe, follow the Abracadam podcast, like us on Facebook, and heck, check me out on Instagram at Super Magic Boy. I could always use a few more followers on there. I love to meet new faces. And like always, thank you for listening. Abracadabra.